All right.
Very good.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for tuning in to Dr. Annette Publishing Pusher. A new week, a new episode, and always another person for us to dialogue with. This is going to be presented in audio and video. So if you happen to see anybody walking by, it's just like if we were sitting out in the park or somewhere and somebody just got to move on, okay? This is real life, okay? So we want to keep this as tight and easy breezy as we possibly can. I want to thank my, I'm going to say the young gentleman that I am interviewing today, really chatting.
I appreciate
with,
that.
Michael Cubs. How you doing, Michael?
I'm doing great, Dr. Annette. Thank you so much for having me and looking forward to the conversation.
Thank you so much. Well, one of the things I like to do as we get started is all of us have some backstory. And even though we are entrepreneurs, kingdompreneurs, have books, we have real life, okay? And we've all started somewhere. How did you start, Michael? Tell us a little bit about your background and how you just got here. We're not gonna talk about the book right now, but about you, Michael.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm very proud of it, actually. And growing up, I might not have been proud of it as much I appreciate it today, but I grew up on a little farm ranch out in West Texas. And so, you know, your typical farm ranch lifestyle, I was up before the sun was and helping my dad and my grandfather, because both of them worked on the farm with, well, they worked the farm and I worked with them, I should say. And then, you know, they, of course, had day jobs, too. So that's, you know, how the small community, farm community is. You work multiple jobs, but you're working all the time. And that just, I look back on it and it was tough at times, you know, getting up before 5 a.m. and moving irrigation lines before you go to school, things like that. But I just now I have a rich appreciation for it, but it did a couple of things that, so that just, you know, we were kind of open. We could do what we wanted to as well, in the sense of when we were kids, you know, once the work was done, we had a farm, we had a ranch that we could go play on. So you could use your imagination. You could run around with buddies. You could get muddy. You could get dirty. You could do anything you needed to do. And it was a great way to be raised, because you just, well, one, you have to solve problems yourself. You know, you've got to figure out your way around everything. So that just continued. I stayed on that in that lifestyle through high school. I was one of the first kids in my family to go to college. So I left and went to Texas Tech University out in Lubbock, Texas. And that was also a good experience. You know, it was demanding, but it was also the first time I'd been around that many people. I mean, Abilene, Texas, which where I was from, I was actually closer to Buffalo Gap, which was a little of nothing, almost living in that community, to go to Texas Tech University, which was at the time had something like 25,000 students. That was quite an experience as well, because you're learning to not only navigate your education, which was expensive and we had to work to pay for it, but also there's a lot of people, a lot of different people that you hadn't met before, you haven't been introduced to. And it was a great experience as well. I met some wonderful people that are still friends of mine today, from all walks of life. It was just a wonderful experience and good education. And so then off I went into the business world. Since then, I've got a son who's 27 years old, and now I'm a grandfather as of June of last year. I'm a grandfather. So when you said young, I really appreciated the introduction that way. And, you know, had a battle with cancer. I was diagnosed at 46, figured out how to navigate that and survive through that. And, continue doing what I needed to do. And so I am in remission for the past 4 years. So I'm very excited about that. But I do advocate early screening. So we can talk about that a little bit if you want to. And so that's my life. I try to get through it with as best I can, smile a lot, make sure people, you engage people when you see them, because everybody deserves at least that. And I travel a lot. So I get to meet a lot of interesting people. And that's what I think it's interesting. And I actually hear, and believe it or not, that Americans are friendly when they travel to Europe and overseas. And I think that's important. So I don't know if that did that answer your question? Or is there anything else you want to know about any of that?
I love travel. I love travel. So that's a good thing. Now, I want to go back to one of the things that you mentioned, because it's very important. You talked about the cancer. You talked about processing through it. You talked about early screening. Share a little bit about what that looks like overall, and especially for men. who oftentimes don't seek the medical care or advice that they need.
And I think that's really important, Dr. Panetta. It's interesting. I was 46 years old. I had known that there were symptoms occurring. And as you say, maybe men are stubborn in that way. Like it'll pass, it'll move on. It's not that big of a deal. You know, I'll just deal with it. They'll keep going. And I should probably say it's colon cancer is what I was diagnosed with at 46. So the standard screening for colon cancer is when you're 50, they recommend getting a colonoscopy. Well, I was 46. So I went to the doctor and because the symptoms persisted, and I was diagnosed with, of all things, hemorrhoids. And I thought, well, that seems odd. And that turns out I bought that diagnosis, and I shouldn't have. Maybe I should have gotten a second opinion for another 6 to 9 months. And by the time I got to a specialist, it was in stage 3B cancer. And it was quite shocking because the doctor that was very frank with me, Dr. Sanders in Carrollton, Texas, he's no longer practicing, but he was a great guy. He set me down. He said, "Clear your deck, clear your schedule. You got a lot to do in the next few months." So off we went. But I do know that insurance companies now are paying for colonoscopies earlier. So if you are in a situation and you think you have the symptoms, I would urge you to get early screening. It is an expensive procedure. It's not as bad as it sounds. It's actually quite an easy. You go in, you take a little nap, and you come out, and they tell you you're fine. But colon cancer itself is one of the most treatable cancers. It's still, I think it's the second or third leading cause of death for people diagnosed with cancer. So it's still a serious, it's a very serious thing. But the nice thing about it is if you catch it early, it's very treatable. The success rate is huge. So if you're in the age group of 40, you know, in your 40s, or even earlier, if you've got it in your family history, go to your doctor, talk to your doctor about it. No one likes to talk about their butt. No one likes to talk about that, you know, going to the bathroom. But it's important because it's a vital part of our biology. It makes up a lot of how you feel, how you act through the day. So that digestive system is important. So just go talk to your doctor about it. And if early screening is something you can do, then do it because you'll be thankful. So for me, I had a really good set of doctors, starting with that Dr. Sanders. I had a good oncologist. It was quite a fight. A lot of chemo, a lot of radiation, 8 surgeries. So I had a lot to deal with. But I just always took the attitude that people need me here. So.
I love that. People always need you. I think that's a blessing because I always talking about we are blessed to be a blessing. And you know, you're blessing that you're still here and that you are able to, you know, share your joy with other people, share your testimony with other people of what you've gone through. And you know, the fact that we know that statistically, a lot of men don't move as fast as they need to when it comes to medical concerns of any type, really. You know, they'll be talking about what's going on, but not moving and seeking medical attention. So I really appreciate you, you know, willingly sharing that with us and encouraging, you know, the men that are listening. If you have any type of issue to arise, don't assume that it's nothing. You know, one of the things my husband says is, "You got medical insurance, go get it taken. What are you waiting on?" You know, like Pete, some people don't have medical insurance. They can't go and get the help, but we have it. So why won't we be proactive instead of reactive? And like you said, 6 to 9 months from one doctor's diagnosis to another made a significant difference in what you had to go through.
Yeah, absolutely, and I should have been more persistent. But like you said, it's easy to say everything's gonna be okay because we're kind of taught that way. Especially my age, my group was taught that way. I'm not gonna imply that you're that age, but we were taught just to tough it out, you know, rub some dirt on it and move on, right? And while there is something to be said for toughness, there's also something to be said for practicality and reality when it comes to things like that. So.
You know, that's the thing, paying attention. So let us focus in on what we need to, because you know, I always say, some people get in their 60s and they say, "I'm on the downhill slide." And I'm thinking, by biblical you know, I still have 100, 120 years at least, you know? So I'm thinking, oh, I got another half of my life almost in front of me. I'm thinking forward, they're thinking backwards. So, you know, we should every day be thinking about our days as greater. And that gives us more opportunity to, as you say, you know, bless other people.
Yes. Yes. And you know, what's amazing is I am a baseball fan. I love the Texas Rangers. So I'm living on a good year, but a couple weeks ago, I was able to have four generations of my family, my father, myself, my son, and my grandson there at a game. And you think about that, and you've got to be there for moments like that, and to be able to have a grandson that can meet his great grandfather, right? So, yes, you're right. Life can be long if we treat ourselves well.
Yes, yes, And it's a blessing, you know, that your son is well, and you have a new baby in the family. That's a blessing right now. Just to see our children to grow and mature, and then to have grandchildren is a great blessing.
Oh yeah, and I'm lucky. I've got my son and my grandson. I also have a stepdaughter, Angeline, and she's going to finish her college education from Oregon State in about a month. Well, I say finish. She's going to finish part of it, and then she's going to go back to school to get her master's. And so, yeah, bless all the way around, because you get to watch these kids become what they want to be, you know, hopefully, and they're going to have struggles along the way, just like we did. But it's nice to see if we can focus on resiliency and help them understand what's happening and fight through whatever challenges they have and enjoy the opportunities they have.
Yeah, that's really, really good. Well, let's shift our conversation a little bit here, because I want to make sure that we get all our pieces, of our pieces in. You have a book, and it's called The Bandit, The Bandit might be a bad thing. Time Bandit.
Yep.
Now, before we talk about the book, let's talk about your business and what you are doing and how that aligns with the book and help us to move forward.
Yep. Yeah. So I've been in the technology software world since I left Texas Tech, just by chance. I didn't study computer science. I just happened to meet somebody as I was out there looking for what is my job going to be now that I'm out of school. And met somebody in the software business, and they introduced me to it and welcomed me and mentored me and showed me the way. So it was very fortunate, and it was a chance meeting, kind of your cliche met him in an airport kind of thing. But I've been in that world for a long time. And if you think about technology and software, the core impetus of it is to improve what you're doing, whether it's work or lifestyle or what have you. So I've been on that quest for 30 years, trying to help companies primarily implement new things to help their company run better, help their employees have better well-being, things like that. So I've been on that journey a while, and I've been fortunate to find roles that were really focused on productivity, really about human productivity more than anything. Some cases how human productivity meets with machine productivity because of things like that. But so it's always been on my mind, and it seems to be a natural thing. It's a problem-solving thing. And I mentioned the farm and ranch I grew up on. You know, when you have a sick animal or you have to feed the animals and get something else done, you've got to figure out a way to manage all that expectations, not just for yourself, but for other things involved, in cases, whether they're cows or chickens or what have you. But the reality is people are struggling with that. And sometimes it's in their job, sometimes it's at home. And so I've just been really passionate about helping people be more productive through my career. So that led me to write the book, and I can tell you a little bit about that if you want to. But did that answer your question? And I did name it Time Bandit. I struggled a little bit because bandit is kind of a negative word. But instead of taking it that way, I said, you need to be your own time bandit. You need to take back your time from all the time wasters and things that can take your time away from you, where you're focused on the wrong things, and get refocused on the right things.
I follow you. I'm not a technology person, but I have enough insight to follow it. I remember when I was in my doctorate program, and I was like, oh, I'm going to get another doctorate in technology, because my husband was an IT guy. And I was like, oh, and then we're going to start this business. Let me tell you, I went over there to the technology and and I took this doctoral level technology course that probably stretched me in every area of my being and my fiber and took everything out of me to get that A. And I said,
Good for you.
this is not for me. This is
It's
not for me. This is not for me. So I appreciate the technology people. You know, like I tell my husband, you know something that I don't know, I'm not even gonna try to figure it out. I'm just gonna call on you, okay? I'm just gonna pay you for your services. So I
Well,
appreciate that.
Doctor, I want to tell you a funny story about that because like I said, I didn't study computer science. I studied international trade, which is economics and political science. But I needed a job to help put me through school, and I found a job at the Texas Tech Health Science Center in a computer lab for the med students. Right, so you've got your doctor, you know this, but the med students were coming in. It was very early when personal computers were a thing, and I accepted the job. And it was for me to help teach med students how to use computers to write their papers, to do calculations and things like that. I didn't know the first thing about it. I'd never had a computer. So there was me saying, okay, got your question, and reading manuals as fast as I could, and then going and helping the students. So sometimes you just got to dive in. I really appreciate that you got a technology slant like that, even though it wasn't something you were passionate about. That's fantastic.
Yeah, I'll let you and my husband stick with that. Now, one of the things that you mentioned was having a mentor. How important is it to have someone who is in your like profession to guide you along the way?
At the time, I didn't think it was that important because what they were doing was opening a door for me, and I viewed it that way when in my younger self. Looking back on it, and now having an opportunity to actually work with people in that kind of mentorship role, it's incredibly important, and it's not for the obvious things. Yes, they can open doors for you in many cases, and that's absolutely helpful and in many cases vital. But it's the advice walking through that door that you get that will pay dividends down the road. How you address certain situations, how you react to other people that maybe are counter to what the way that you want to see it, and your reaction is what's going to set things in motion, not necessarily what that person feels or what you feel. It's the reaction to it. It's that if you think about a Buddha, once I love this concept. You talked about the first dart and the second dart. The first dart's going to happen, right? There's going to be pain in our lives. There's going to be things that happen to us. It's the second dart that you throw that causes the most reaction because it's you're making a choice to throw that second dart. And if you do it with anger or fear and things like that, then it's going to create a reaction back at you. And so it's really where mentorship helps is handling those situations, thinking about the next step, thinking about the ne what how you should play the next step. And then, of course, advice along the way, learning introductions, learning just how to be in if it's a business mentorship and understanding how to be in that particular business. So I think it's vital. And I wish every young person could find the right mentor. And hopefully some of it's been through, your parents and grandparents because they've seen life we haven't seen, and they've got some advice for us too. Right?
Let me ask you a question, thinking about this mentor thing. Do you think that mentoring is the free version of coaching?
I think it could be. I think it be, could be stated that way. But I also think mentorship is a two-way street. Whereas coaching is a transaction, somewhat. Yet coaching's valuable. I mean, it is absolutely valuable. But mentorship is a two-way street because the mentor gets as much out of it as the mentee does. And for me, when I talk to young people, well, sometimes I'm amazed at the way they think. And sometimes it's a wonderful way of thinking that I myself would like to do. So I think it could be categorized as the free way of coaching, but I also think it's a wildly rewarding thing for both the mentor and the mentee. And maybe coaching is too, depending on the coach, but I think it less of a transaction and more of a relationship.
Okay, very good, very good. Because yeah, that's a really, really great response to that. Now, I want to talk about the book itself,
Yes.
Time Bandit. Now, as I was reading some of your content, I was like, what? Because I am a to-do list girl. I am a to-do list. I have got to have my to-do list. Do I do everything on my to-do list? Nope. I just move things around the next day. And, you know, things get accomplished.
Yep.
But do you think that having that to-do list is necessarily a good thing, or it could be a hindrance? What do you think?
No. Well, it can be a hindrance, and I'll explain that in a minute, but I think it's an absolute good thing. Everybody should have their to-do list. What I'm trying to help people focus on is what on that to-do list has an importance factor and an urgency factor. So it's more of a categorization of a to-do list, and more so, and you know from the book, is when you start mixing your to-do list with work and life, right? You have a home, personal life, you have a work life, and hopefully you have aspirations of other things you want to do, like you were, I don't know if it was an aspiration, but you took the computer science class. You know, people want to do other things. They want to challenge themselves. So if you think about the balance of work life and aspirations, that to-do list can get very long. It can get very cluttered with things that may take you a while to do. It may take a minute to do. So there's this, the notion in the book is to help you categorize and prioritize your to-do list in whatever form it consists of, whether it's on paper like yours, or if it's, you know, some of it's in email, some of it's in something else, a calendar system, et cetera. It's about finding that balance that works for you to focus on what truly matters. And Dr. Nett, and you know as well as I do, these days, you know, these things have caused a massive distraction. So people have good intentions to go do things on their to-do list, but there's so many time wasters that hit us. And it could be meetings, it could be social networking, it could be just that fact that your phone is binging and somebody's trying to reach you, and it can get you distracted. So all of these things add up. To-do lists are wonderful things. What I'm hoping to help people do is figure out the right way to work through that to-do list in a most effective manner, so they really do focus on what matters to them. So I applaud your to-do list, by the way.
Well, I love my to-do list, so I'm glad that it's that I'm good at what I'm doing. And I do agree, one of the things that I do is every night I look at my list and what I did not accomplish, and then I ask myself, what on this list needs to move to the top for tomorrow? Yep. Because like you said, there's a lot of things that we need to do that we don't have to do today.
Yeah, and the categorization I use in that, Dr. Nett, is an old practice from President Eisenhower. It's called the Eisenhower Matrix. It's a priority matrix. And so the factors that you put on that is this task important, and is this task urgent? And so for those things that are urgent and important, do those first. For those things that are urgent but not necessarily important, well, delegate those if you can, whether you're delegating to somebody else or automation or what have you. And those that are important but not urgent, schedule those for later. Just go ahead and write it in and schedule it. And if they're not important and they're not urgent, just stop doing them or park them for later. Maybe it's something you want to pick up next year or something like that, then park it for later. So that's kind of it's a simple matrix. But if you could just find out what you need to do first, what you need to schedule for later, what you can delegate, and what you need to stop doing, it will free up a lot of time.
Okay, so some of those things on that list may be something for midterm goal or long-term goal that we can kind of
That's put right.
to the backside of that page and focus in on what we have in front of us.
Yes, and those goals may be able to break down into sub-things, and that's where habit tracking. I don't know if you've read the book Atomic Habits, but I do talk a lot about habits. So what really prompted me to write the book, I was going back and forth to the UK for a job, and I had a team that was global. And so I couldn't always sit with them and talk to them about things. So we were talking on video calls like this, or when I could sit with them, it was fascinating to look at their to-do lists. And and one young lady in England had something like 38 things on a to-do list. And I said, those are the things you're trying to do today? Yes. Which one are you doing first? I don't know. And then I said, can I see yesterday's page? And it's just like you're doing, but she didn't have a method to do it. So I just started thinking about how could I help this individual or anybody like her prioritize that. But a lot of things that were on our list should be habits. So if you take some breakdown and you say, that's not a task, that's a habit. And that's something that I want in my life. And that's something that will make my life better for whatever reason, whether it's reading more, going for a walk every day, meditation, whatever it may be, then let's make those habits and let's just build them into your day. And whether you are using things like right when you get out of bed, you put on your walking shoes and you go for a walk, or maybe it's the last thing you do at night, whatever the case is, let's prompt those habits to occur. Let's get them off your to-do list and they just become part of your routine. And then the task, you've already freed up some space on your task list. Then we go and look at important and urgency in your task list to figure out what to do first.
I like that. Great, great. So now I have another question for you. So I have a book called Holistic Wellness, Mind, Body, Spirit. And I see that you actually use the word holistic view when you were talking about personal work and aspirational goals. Talk to us about that.
So what happens a lot of times with people like me, and I did this a lot in my younger career, is I had my work to-do list and I had my personal to-do list. And I kept them separate, and you know, sometimes one of them got ignored. And unfortunately, in many cases, what a lot of people do in business is they ignore the personal list. And then they find themselves, you know, in a bind on the personal side. And maybe they're really doing great job in work, but if you're failing on the personal side, you're going to become out of balance. Or maybe you're spending too many hours looking at that screen or doing that thing, and it's causing other physiological problems because staring at a screen all day just isn't good. You've got to take a break. So what I really want people to do is start thinking about those three things: work, personal life, and aspirational life, and make sure that on your to-do list that you have a good balance of that. And you know, it's okay. If at 10:30 you need to call a doctor and make an appointment for next week, at 10:45 you can get back to that spreadsheet, right? It's okay, but manage it all with that same urgency and importance criteria because they all matter. And if you don't, you're going to get out of balance and you get unhealthy. And I don't want to say that's what caused cancer, but I know I was working a lot up until that point, and maybe I didn't pay attention to my health and my diet or whatever I needed to do. And maybe that was an indicator of where it was headed. I don't want to say that, but it may have been. So that balance is absolutely important. I'm going to grab the book. I haven't read it, but I look forward to it. I love reading about the holistic self because I think it's vastly important for everybody, and it's so underappreciated in our communities, right? In our work communities in particular. But the pandemic, you got to look for bright spots sometimes, Dr. Nett. It really did refocus us on that holistic view, you know, about family and health and work, right?
Yes, holistic is critical. In respect to your book, you have a lot of depth, some really simplified pieces though. If you can have depth and it's simple, the two go together some way, somehow, okay? That somebody said that's an oxymoron. But anyway, how can just maybe tell us one or two ways? Because I know that it's easy to get distracted, and you talked about that. You talked about these phones, all of these social things that could easily draw us in. Oh, I stopped to look at Instagram, and next thing I know, 45 minutes has passed by. But what can we do to help eliminate some of these distractions?
It's hard to eliminate, but what I would urge you to do is try to control them. So you don't maybe necessarily need to abstain from Instagram, but give yourself a time limit, and even on your phone, you can set a limit that says, "I'm going to look at Instagram for 15 minutes or 20 minutes or whatever your tolerance is for those things," and just moderate your usage of it. And that moderation is a good lesson in all of our lives, right? Whatever course it is, food, you know, other things, as well as things like social media. So one is getting that moderation right. The second thing is even things like meetings. You know, meetings are to me become, I'm almost coming Don Quixote's windmill of chasing down meetings, because we all get invited to meetings and it's great to be included. But if we're not part of the contribution of that meeting, or we are just there to listen, do we really need to be there? You know, and so I'm challenged myself every day to not only have not 30-minute meetings, but 25-minute meetings, to give myself 5-minute break, or 50-minute meetings instead of hour meetings. And then I really want to know, is there an agenda for that meeting? Am I a contributor? Am I a participant? Or am I just a bystander? And so can I eliminate some of those meetings from the calendar, giving myself back time to do the other things that are important to me? So it's little things like that that you can just control, those time wasters, as opposed to just abstaining. Now, you may have things in your life you do want to give up, and then I would just put that on your habit list of break a bad habit, you know, and maybe that bad habit is Twitter or something like that, or maybe it's something else. But habits can do two things. It can help build the habits we want. It can also break the old habits that we want to stop doing. So hopefully that answered your question. There's kind of that balance of moderation, build and break new habits, and then of course just trying to find little hacks that can give you back time.
That's good. You know, one of the things that I do as part of my presentations, and I'm sure you know exactly where I'm going with this, is a personal SWOT analysis.
Yes.
Remember the wonderful
Yes.
SWOT, you know, really helps us to look at what our time wasters are, those things that we really need to do that are good, and those things that we don't need to do, and what external factors are impacting us. So I really
Yep.
zoomed in on that. So I really see, how do you see that? Because I thought about that as I was listening to what you were saying.
Yes. Yeah. I love a SWOT analysis. It's a powerful tool to analyze. And part of the what you just described there is a great approach, Dr. Nett, because what you said is you have a rhythm in which you prepare presentations, and the SWOT analysis is one of those tools that you use. I think that rhythm is absolutely important. There's really three keys, I think, to the time bandit methodology. And one is rhythm. You've already talked about two that you do. Every day or every night, you look at that to-do list and you say, okay, what needs to come to the top of the list tomorrow? What did I do? What did I didn't do? You know, so that rhythm every day is what you're evaluating. And then when you go into a presentation, your preparation, you have a rhythm to it. So that rhythm is number one. Second is being honest with ourselves, right? We just have to be honest with ourselves about what we can and can't do, and how much time it takes, because so many people underestimate the time it may take to do something. Let's be honest with yourself, you know? And then the third thing is being able to say no. So we can talk about that a little more, but sometimes you just have to say no. If you've got a long to-do list, and somebody asks you to do something else, two things have to happen. Either something needs to drop down in priority. If they say that has to be done today or right now, what are you deprioritizing to do that task? Or should you just say no because you've got other important things that you focus on? So those kind of three things might balance. And I love the way that you talked about you use a SWOT analysis for the presentation to get the message right, to get your own thoughts right around what you want the outcome to be. And that's fantastic.
You know, I like your talking about those three areas. You said rhythm, preparation in your rhythm preparation, being honest with ourselves about what we can and what we cannot do, being willing to say no. And I like to tell people that no really can be a positive word for us.
Yes, it
How
can
do
be.
you convey that to the people that you connect with?
Well, for us, if I'm talking to somebody about their own life and what they're challenged with, it becomes sometimes you just have to say, what's the consequence of saying no? What is the real consequence, right? There's an emotional consequence that we perceive, and we may overperceive how that person or that thing is going to take it. But if you say no, let's play that tape forward. What really happens? If you say no, do they go find somebody else to do it? And is that okay? Sure, that may be the case. Maybe that thing doesn't need to be done before something else that you're doing, because what you're doing has a greater cause than what that particular ask was. And so play that tape forward a little bit on saying no. And sometimes it's hard to do ourselves. So helping somebody objectively see that is the way to do it. As far as sometimes in business settings, you just have to be practical about it and say, if your boss comes to you and says, I need this now, then you have to say, well, here's the list of other things you need now. Which one falls off? You know, which one gets replaced with this new ask? And it's not an easy conversation sometimes, but it has to be had, because otherwise you're going to deliver poorly on two or three things instead of doing really well on the things that are really most important. So I think it's just introspection. If you can pause and understand the consequences of saying no, chances are you're going to get to the conclusion that you're the right answer, whether it's saying no to that task or saying no to something else.
In the world of business, and you have to answer to someone above you, and everything is a priority. Everything is hot. I hear you saying you have to really look at the things that you're being asked to do, zone in on those things. I think prioritize for yourself what's most important, then go back to that leader and have that discussion with them as it's impossible for all of these things to be done at one time. So what is most important in this list to you right now?
Yes. That's exactly right. If you can have that conversation. Now, if you don't have a relationship with your boss that you can have that conversation, that's a tough spot. And I empathize with that. But if you can have that conversation, you're probably helping that boss out too, because just by the fact that they come to you every day with a different fire to put out, they're probably mentally challenged right now to figure out what should they focus on. So if you can have that honest conversation about your own list, it may help them see what's important that they need to focus on today as well. So hopefully everybody can do that. And even in personal life too, right? We all have demands of things. And sometimes at home you say yes because you know, it's more important to the other person, but it's just, it's a balance and understanding the priorities that we just have to do. We have to think about the consequences of doing this versus that. And it's a tough thing sometimes, but that's the reality.
Do you think that if we don't have an audible voice with management where we can talk about these things and we're receiving the correspondence through, say, email, and we keep getting pieces, it would be wise to take those pieces, integrate them into a new email and say, these are the things that you've asked to be done today. I want to clarify what you need most. But I would say, if you can get it in writing, that's the best thing, if at all possible. Because when somebody just keep coming to you, say, I need this, it's easy to not get the right being done, but you might not know that the thing that you done wasn't what they wanted done first. I don't know if you've ever had that happen to you. I remember one time I was working for somebody and that we had this discussion about something and she told me when she needed it. And then the next day she was asking me how it was going. And I was like, but you said this is Tuesday. You said you needed Thursday. Why are you asking me today? And I have other things to do.
Yeah. I think what you just described with the email dialogue is it's unfortunate, but it's what you described is a great way of approaching it. If you have a boss that you're not verbally talking to, like you said, but they keep sending you tasks to do, I think what you just said is a perfect. Go ahead and summarize what those things are and the dates that, as you understand them, that says this needs to be on Thursday, this is on Friday, this is next Tuesday, whatever it is. Based on what you know, send that back and say, help me prioritize to your boss that's sending all those requests to you, because we need to understand and we need to be on this together to deliver all this. We need an understanding of how we're going to accomplish this. And oh, by the way, don't be afraid to put in your business as usual. I mentioned the kind of concept in the book. Sometimes if you're a claims adjuster, when you wake up, you know you need 6 hours of adjusting claims or 2 hours of adjusting claims or whatever it is. If you're a nurse, you know you got to do the rounds. So you've got to allocate that time. That time doesn't go away. You still have to do the job. You still have to do the business as usual, because if we fail to do that, we have all kinds of other problems. So when you're communicating with your boss at that level, say, oh, by the way, I need 4 hours to do these things, which are just part of the job that I need to do. Now, here's the priority list you've sent to me. Help me prioritize which one's first, which one's second. So I think it's a great, your suggestion is awesome.
Thank you. That was good. Now, in your intro of your book, you said, this is the first sentence. It says, time is a precious commodity that we cannot recycle or retrieve, a resource that we all wish we had more of. Now, we all know that there is only 24 hours in the day. We need X amount of hours to rest. And then, I mean, I know some people who claim they work 16 and 18 hours, which we know is unhealthy.
Yes.
So finding that, you talk about finding the balance, finding your rhythm, gaining the flow that's needed to get the things done, and also getting that holistic perspective of alignment that you're talking about. All of this is so good in the book that you have written. And we, you know, your title, Time Bandit. Bandit reminds me of someone stealing something. So we don't want time to be the thief of our day. So as we are nearing the end of our time together in this session, I want you to share with us some final thought on what we can do. And I also want you to tell us about your podcast.
Okay. Absolutely. Well, let's start with the what to do. So I think that if you keep balance in mind first, that you do have a work life and you do have a personal life and you do have dreams that you want to think about. Don't be afraid to mix those. Like, as I said earlier, you might have a work to-do list and a home to-do list. Mix them together. And the reason for that is when you apply the effort of importance and urgency, they all need to be considered, because you can't work 12 hours on your work list and not have the time to get to your personal list, right? So go ahead and move them together. There's some fluidity to that that you can enjoy. Yes, I'm not saying to do all your personal work while you're in the office. That's not what I'm saying. But there's a balance at which you can strike that still accomplishes things off all of your lists. Making time to do that aspirational thing, an art class on every Tuesday, whatever it may be, then you need to make time for that. And once it's there, you can then judge what is important and urgent on the other times around that. But don't compromise that art class if that's something you're passionate about. So build that in and then prioritize important and urgency around that. And don't forget the power of habits. Sometimes if you can take little things and do just a little bit every day on that habit and it becomes part of your lifestyle, you're going to achieve bigger things because it just incrementally builds you up. So I really think don't be afraid of mixing the lists and then apply the same rules to all of it and make sure that you've got balance. Because if you look at your list, and one thing about the app that we have coming out that I really love, it's not out yet, but when it's out, is the first thing you do when you have a task is you assign a role to it. And now you can go look at that balance of your roles. So you may have 10 things in work and 4 things in personal and no in aspirational. So maybe that's a sign we need to focus on ourselves a little bit. So that's what I would do with that. So hopefully that answered your question on finding that balance and still getting things done. But in time, you're not going to get the day back. So make the most of it. So make sure you're not spending it on those time wasters we talked about. As far as my podcast goes, I do have a podcast with my work, and that's something that I do separately. But for Time Bandit, I do a 10-minute live stream. Try to do it every week, and I invite guests from all over doing different things. I'd love to have you, Dr. Annette, on it. And we talk about their favorite time-saving tip and what their least favorite time waster is and a little bit about themselves. And I try to do it in 10 minutes to save time. So have you noticed the book is small because I don't want you to spend all your time reading my words. I want you to get out and do. And then the podcast or live stream is also 10 minutes to try to just keep so you can get an easy, quick time management tip from experts or not experts, just people like us. And then then you move on with your day. So that's it. And you can find it on LinkedIn. I also have a YouTube channel. Best way probably way is LinkedIn or Facebook. Just find Michael Cups. There's not many of us out there. So with CUPPS is the name. And I'd love to talk to you. We also have a website you can find me on at timebandit.io. And you can find information on the book, the upcoming app, and you can reach out to me there. I'd love to talk to people.
All right, y'all. Y'all heard it straight from the expert here, Michael Cupp. Check out his book, Time Bandit, because you don't want to be wasting your time, okay, people?
That's right.
Thank you so much, Michael. Appreciate you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Annette. Have a wonderful day and wonderful week.
Thank you. I'll catch you up with everybody next week. Bye-bye.